important. Because, you know, as I said in our previous program, sometimes we take being Muslim for granted. And we are Muslim by name, by heritage, by our ancestors and forefathers in our country. But we forget this tarbiyah or training in Islam. I think this important topic makes human beings very much different from the others. When we are talking about education, we are not talking about the official education, the alphabets or mathematics. We are talking about kind of the tarbiyah, which is happening at the aspect of the and the ratio of spirituality. How much do you think that the position of training is really missed in today's world for the people, and especially in the Muslim lands? Sorry, because this topic is important. We have to focus on that.
Very true. Actually, tarbiyah in itself means any change in the behavior.
Okay.
So even official official education is can be looked as a part of this tarbiyah and this upbringing that we are talking about. And before that, I think I want to not to go one step ahead. I want to be one step back to see what does this concept of, let's say, ilm and knowledge, what is the concept of ilm and knowledge in an Islamic worldview that actually ends towards education and also a change in the behavior. When we look at the meaning of the top, the word ilm or knowledge, or let's say whatever it is translated to.
Of course, knowledge is ma'rifa mostly, and ilm is science.
Ilm in the language of Quran is something like science, I think.
Okay.
So we look at we find it that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala defines it as something which is light, and al-munur.
Okay, so it's kind of a knowledge, that's right, inside, that's right.
So this knowledge cannot usually be gained and actually obtained by formal education. Sometimes it comes by piety, through piety and taqwa.
Even the formal education can be an obstacle in that way sometimes.
Sometimes it can be.
Okay.
Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala says, وَاتَّقُوا اللَّهُ وَيُعَلَّمُكُمُ اللَّهُ. So through piety, Allah will increase you in knowledge. You see? So look, our Prophet, Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alayhi wa sallam, has he actually passed any official and formal education?
No.
He was Rasulun Ummi. But do you know anyone more knowledgeable, more let's say, perfect in knowledge than him in the scene of the earth?
No.
So how come that he actually came to this world, he did not pass any education, I mean formal and official education, even the formal education that was there, for example, the kind of literature which was being taught in, let's say, circles and gatherings in Arabian Peninsula, he even did not pass all those sections, but he was the most knowledgeable person of his time. So this is what Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala...
Knowledge in the true sense of the word.
So this is so this is what actually the concept of knowledge actually we can gain from the seerah, from the Quran, from the conduct of Ahlul Bayt alayhi wasallam.
Yes.
So let's now come to our first step to see what do we mean by this education, formal education, and let's say education in general. By education, we want to bring a sort of change into the behavior of, let's say, subjects, whether they are students, they are human beings, they are actually people gathering into communities. So this education, when it is intermingled with taqwa, with, let's say, a sort of perseverance from doing any bad action, actually shows the kind of change in the behavior. In case there is no this element of piety, then it will lead to bombardment of Nagasaki and Hiroshima. It will end to, let's say, the kind of animal life that we can see and witness in some of the communities in the world.
That's all right.
We don't know to name the communities that we are actually talking about. So for a tarbiyah, for this concept of tarbiyah, to find the relationship of this tarbiyah or upbringing with the concept of education, so we need to need this actual introduction.
That's right.
So if we have this concept, this element of taqwa in it, this element of, again, doing everything in this world for the main cause, the main movement of human being in this actually creation, which is closeness of God and stepping in the way of, let's say, perfection, so it will find its result in education of our subjects.
But say it amen, in order to reach Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala in terms of a spiritual wafering, and in fact, we need a murabbi, we need a trainer, some people who have experience in this field of study, as for example in mathematics or geometry, we refer to the professor at the university. We have to get to the experts in this field. Who are the experts and who can really change us?
Well, Islam has clearly, you know, give us instructions through, you know, prophets.
Okay.
And it started from Prophet Adam. It ended with Prophet Muhammad,
yes,
peace be upon him. And after him, his progeny, of course, continued this journey of guidance.
That's right.
So these are the perfect role models for us. And I think we should, you know, when we talk about usul-e-deen or the principles of religion, we, you know, reaches to the Nubuwa and Imama, and then we understand. And these two sections, they possess the quality of isma, which is free from error.
Mm-hmm.
So when we reach to this conclusion that they are free from error, it means that they are perfect,
yes,
role models. And then this should be our guiding point, you know, in order for us to basically follow those guidelines which have been provided by them.
That's right.
Of course, with Quran-e-Majid, of course. Quran-e-Majid is the first source, and then after that, it's the life and actions of prophets and Aimma alayhim salam.
That's all right. The Quran has to be open in our eyes, but more important is that rather than memorizing it only, we have to practice it, in our daily life. So it got us. Sometimes we cannot interpret the words of the Holy Quran. We have to get to the experts. Now the experts have been the prophets himself and the infallible imams, and after that the ulama, the scholars of the religion of Islam, which can show us. And this is very important. I mean, beside this wajibat that we are doing every day, our obligations, we have to also be careful about some of the recommended actions that has been suggested to us in order to change our lifestyle. Because I think that if we're going to do our wajibat at the specific times during the week, and after that become the same person, it will be useless.
Yes.
But if we're going to take care of our behavior and lifestyle in the intervals between our wajibat, I mean the Salat al-Yawm or something like that, on that time I think this concept of tarbiyah is going to be manifested in a better way. Thank you very much, Sayyid Ayman Rizvi,
you're
and
welcome.
Brother Ali Alavian, for your presence in the program Viewpoints. For sure, human beings have some needs. What are these needs and how to answer these needs in this world based on the religion of Islam in the speeches of Imam Khamenei? Inshallah, we'll discuss it in our upcoming session of the program. It was very kind of you, and thank you very much for your presence. Dear listeners, thank you much too for listening to this episode of the program Viewpoints. I'm Atta, the host of this program. Visit our website for more information at parstoday.com/Ian Call of Islam page. Also, a YouTube channel and Instagram page, Call of Islam Radio. Till another episode, may Allah bless you all. Fi amanallah.
The same when I'm too concerned by what they say. Why should I wanna have you? To doubt you would be the worst mistake. Deep inside I know, amidst all the darkness and everything which makes no sense, I know that you exist. Guides me through my darkest nights, shows me right from wrong. A world that often lies, as I don't need anyone, anything in life but you. No, I don't need anyone to show me my way. No, I don't need anyone but you.
Around the world with reporters. are all against the health pass. That was the main slogan that brought together many protesters all over France. For the third week in a row, they continued marching against the government's decision to put in place a health pass for all citizens. This is an electronic document that every citizen has to show in public places that proves that they are vaccinated or have a negative PCR test. Medical figures are crystal clear. In European countries where the majority of its population is vaccinated, like the UK, the Netherlands, Denmark or Ireland, the COVID virus and its Delta variant are under control. So why are these protesters taking the street again?
I am in favor of the vaccination, not for this one, because we have not enough information about this vaccine. So I am in favor of the vaccination, but I am against the health path. We have our liberties and no one should tell us what we should do or not.
In hospitals, doctors say that the new wave of people with severe COVID symptoms are all non-vaccinated persons. In Martinique and La Réunion, two overseas French territories, a new lockdown has begun, given that very few people are vaccinated. The vaccination campaign has accelerated the last 3 weeks. In France now, more than 50% have received two jabs of the vaccine. So is it responsible to protest against these mandatory measures?
All this science will tell us, and science needs time to be proven efficient. So we need more time to see what's really happening.
I am not against the vaccine itself. I am more against the health pass and the political use of it. If the government had given sufficient means to health workers and hospitals to handle the COVID crisis, it would have been more efficient.
3,000 police officers have been mobilized to control all the marches today in the French capital. There were some clashes. It's amazing to see so many protesters on the street at the start of the holiday season. Some say that with these protests against the authoritarian measures of the French government, the Yellow Vest movement rose from its ashes. Despite clear indications that vaccination is effective in reducing symptomatic cases and deaths from COVID-19, protests continue in France, but rather against a mandatory health pass considered as a violation of individual liberties rather than against the vaccination itself. Chris Den Hant, Paris.
A new victory against the Saudi-backed militant groups was made by Yemen's armed forces in the second phase of the Al-Nasr al-Mubin operation. The spokesman of the Yemeni army, Yahya Sariya, said Nu'man and Nata regions of the country's central province of Al-Bayda were fully liberated from the control of the Saudi-backed terrorists. He said the military operation had left hundreds of Saudi-backed militants killed and injured, adding that the Yemeni forces had also captured a number of the militants.
Our armed forces have completed the second phase of the Al-Nasr al-Mubin operation, which led to the liberation of the districts of Nateh and Nu'man, and the defeat of the elements of the militant groups associated with the Saudi-led coalition and inflicting heavy losses on them, while hundreds of them were killed, wounded, and captured.
Sariya also said the Yemeni forces have confiscated militants' weapons, which are US-made, according to military experts. They say this is yet another proof of the US military support for Daesh and Al-Qaeda terrorists in Yemen.
This operation proved that the United States supports terrorist groups, whether militarily or through statements accusing the Yemeni army of hampering the peaceful solutions. America is the one who directs and controls the terrorist groups. Today, there is a lot of evidence proving Washington's support for terrorist groups, including American-made weapons that the Yemeni army seized during the recent operation.
2 weeks ago, the Yemeni army took control of large areas in Al-Bayda, the first stage of the Al-Nasr al-Mubin operation that was launched on July 13th. The operation was part of military efforts to push members of Al-Qaeda and Daesh out of their strongholds in Al-Bayda.
Observers say the U.S. support for the terrorist groups in Al-Bayda is aimed at hampering the Yemeni army's advances toward Marib, the last stronghold of Saudi-backed militants in northern Yemen. However, the Yemeni army says it will continue the operations until the liberation of all Yemeni territories and putting an end to years-long Saudi-imposed war. Abdul Latif Al-Washali, Sana'a.
There is no evidence of institutional racism in the UK, says a report commissioned by the British government, but a landmark art exhibition on the doorsteps of Queen Elizabeth II paints a very different picture.
Born in Babylon is the title of this exhibition about black communities and their long struggle against systemic racism here in the UK. It comes 10 years after the police killing of unarmed black man Mark Duggan on the streets of London, with the aim of shining a light on his family's struggle for justice, as well as many more families who have lost a loved one at the hands of the British state.
Since 1990, there have been 1,433 people who have died in police custody. While the majority of deaths are white British, there is a disproportionate overrepresentation of black people who die as a result of use of force or restraint by the police.
10 years since the killing of Mark Duggan, but in 2015, in Haringey, the same borough, they killed Jermaine Baker. Last week, we had a notice put out that another person of colour, black person, has been killed in Haringey by the same police.
Stafford Scott, the curator of the exhibition, and who supported many of these families in their fight for justice, designed the showcase to illustrate how systemic racism is not just present in the police force, but something that permeates through different institutions in British society.
The War in Babylon is an exhibition that we hope encapsulates the entirety of the black experience in the UK. You'd have recently heard this foolishness from some report by some geezer called Tony Sewell that said that there's no such thing as institutional racism in this country. War in Babylon says that that's an absolute lie and provides the absolute evidence that that is a lie.
The pictures, videos and texts present an account for those whose voices are often not heard, or worse still, willfully ignored by the mainstream.
We're at the Mall. That's the same address as the Queen of England, the Queen of England resides. We've moved the front line in the fight against racism and the fight for truth and rights from off of the estates, from out of the hood, and we've taken it right to the heart of the establishment.
The need for exhibitions like this is as pertinent now as it's ever been, especially as the British government expands policies like racially disproportionate blanket stop and search, while simultaneously denying the existence of institutional racism, signalling to black communities in the UK that their historic fight for equality is far from over. Ahmed Kabella, London.
Palestinians accused Israel of using unjustified deadly force against Palestinian children in the occupied West Bank. In its latest report, Defense for Children International Palestine stated that the Israeli soldiers continue to kill Palestinian children with no recourse or accountability. In its report, DCI Palestine revealed that evidence it has obtained shows children killed didn't pose any threat to the Israeli soldiers at the time of their killing. The group says that Israeli forces use lethal force against Palestinian children in circumstances that may amount to extrajudicial or willful killing.
Killing unarmed minors amounts to war crime and even crime against humanity. Israeli soldiers act in line with shoot-to-kill policy, opening fire to kill Palestinian children. The troopers know their military establishment will hold any of them accountable for killing innocent Palestinians.
On Friday, a 17-year-old Palestinian boy, Mohammed Tamimi, was fatally shot by live ammunition in his back during a peaceful anti-settlement protest that was held in Nabi Saleh town, West Ramallah. Meanwhile, on Monday, a 17-year-old Yusuf Nawaf Mhareb, a resident of the Ramallah area village of Abwin, succumbed to wounds he had sustained a prayer when he was shot in the neck by Israeli forces during a protest against Israel's aggression on the Gaza Strip. Experts say that under international law, the use of lethal force during a protest is allowed only when a direct and lethal threat to life or of serious injury exists. And as usual, Israel continues violating international law, including rules which limit the intentional lethal use of firearms, in particular against children.
Israeli forces have a twofold purpose by targeting Palestinian children. First, they want to intimidate Palestinian children to prevent them from taking part in anti-Israeli activity. And second, to oppress the Palestinians in general, to impose and strengthen the Israeli military control.
Since the beginning of the year, 10 Palestinian miners were killed in the occupied West Bank by Israeli forces using live ammunition. Palestinians accuse Israel of using unjustified force against their children. They even warn that Israeli soldiers will continue killing children in cold blood as long as they won't face inquiry. Mona Kandil, occupied Ramallah.
Speaker of Iran's parliament, Mohammad Baqir Qalibov, has met Syria's President Bashar al-Assad in Damascus. Assad said that Iran is a main partner for Syria, which offered its support in all sectors. He asserted that ongoing coordination for fighting terror had a positive impact on the ground and will continue until the liberation of all Syrian territories. Qalibov said the Syrian and Iranian people's determination to participate in the recent presidential elections in the two countries proves the failure of policies of pressure adopted by their enemies. Qalibov held a separate meeting with his Syrian counterpart, Hamoud Sabbagh. He said military and political relations with Syria are currently in their strongest and best form, expressing willingness to enhance economic cooperation with Syria.
After their failure in military war against Iran, the Zionist and U.S. regimes have waged an economic war against us. Our joint priority now is to achieve development in our countries, improve our economy, restore the infrastructure, and increase the bulk of mutual trade exchange.
Sabbagh referred to the high level of coordination between parliaments of Iran and Syria, affirming that the two countries stand together in the resistance alliance, working to eliminate hegemony and colonialism which their enemies are imposing on the region.
We held a very special and important meeting for further coordination between both parliaments through consultations and the exchange of expertise. We also agreed on activating the work of our friendship committees in the two parliaments for the benefit of the two peoples.
Speaker Qalibov also held talks with Syria's Prime Minister Hussein Arnous. They underlined the importance of expansion of economic cooperation in both public and private sectors for facing economic sanctions, as well as the siege imposed on the Iranian and Syrian people. The exchange of visits between Iranian and Syrian officials reflects the strong historic ties between the two countries. There has been a noticeable development in economic, political, military, and parliamentary cooperation since the start of the war on Syria, which represents an alliance both states are strengthening to counter U.S. and Western pressure against them. Hamad Ali, Damascus.
Sheikh Ibrahim al-Zazaki and his wife.
Addressing the press, a member of Zazaki's defense team said the Kaduna State High Court discharged and acquitted Sheikh Zazaki and his wife Zinat of all 8 charges in a ruling that lasted for several hours. The judge ruled that the prosecution has failed to establish any case against the leader of the Islamic movement in Nigeria and his wife.
The court ruled that the charge ought not to be in the first place. You cannot arraign a man for an offense that was allegedly committed, as at the time the said crime was not an offense. And the court was very emphatic in that. That yes, the Kaduna State government has powers to enact laws, but it cannot enact laws to prosecute an offense retrospectively.
Sheikh Zazaki and his wife Zinat were arrested in December 2015 following an attack on his home and worship center by soldiers of the Nigerian army, which resulted in the killing of hundreds of Zazaki's supporters. In a statement, the Islamic movement said the judgment is a vindication of Sheikh Zazaki and a victory for truth and justice against tyranny and oppression.
The events of December 12th and 15th of 2015 were orchestrated by state machineries who are using the instrumentalities of state apparatus to fight a religious fight. It is strictly the events of December 12, 2015 is strictly a fight between Shiites and Sunnis, fights that was imported from Saudi Arabia for whatever purpose.
The Kaduna State High Court has set Sheikh Zazaki and his wife Zinat free. The Islamic movement, and indeed many of Zazaki's supporters, have expressed happiness with the outcome of this judgment. Anjum Abdullahi, Kaduna.
To
3,000 of Ethiopian refugees crossed the Sudanese borders on Monday, arriving at Taya village at Basunda locality in Gadarif state. Reports say the refugees is considered the biggest number of refugees to cross into the country in only one day since the outbreak of war last November in Tigray region. Many believe that the wave may worsen security and humanitarian situation in the region due to armed conflicts erupting at western area of Ethiopia.
Sudan has adopted an open-door policy in receiving Ethiopian refugees since the beginning of the conflict. So far, Sudan has welcomed about 75 to 80,000 refugees. We call on the international community to help us meet the needs of the increasing refugees fleeing from the fight in the Tigray region.
Since the beginning of fighting, tens of thousands of Ethiopians have sought safety in Sudan, but conditions in Sudan refugee camps are presenting a new challenges, as Sudanese NGOs early responded to humanitarian situation in states affected of refugees influx.
Actually, since the crisis of the refugees started, the Tigray crisis started, Sudanese Red Crescent has been present from day one. And that is basically because we do have our ongoing activities in the region through our branches in Kassala and Gadarif. So we do have ongoing programs for the already existed old refugees in the area. So with the beginning of the crisis, we were already on the ground.
In the light of the latest development in the Tigray region, UN agencies strive to maintain a strong staff presence, provided there is access in Hamadayet in case there is an increased influx. Several partners continue to remain on the ground in anticipation of this possibility.
Security and health challenges face Sudanese and Ethiopian governments to cope with increasing number of refugees. Khartoum says it is still waiting for international support to tackle the crisis. Muhammad Ali Fazari, Khartoum.
An Algerian judoka athlete who made headlines last week for shunning an Israeli opponent at the Tokyo Olympics has now been temporarily suspended along with his coach from the International Judo Federation, meaning that Fethi Nurin will not be able to compete after making his bold statement in support of Palestine. After returning to Algeria, V secured an exclusive interview with Nurin to ask why he felt he had to walk.
I was pitted to play against an athlete from the usurper entity occupying Palestinian land, a regime which kills innocent people and drives them out of their homes, day and night. Because of this, I don't accept that my hand is smeared with someone who represents an entity like this, and for his flag to be associated with the Algerian flag, which is in support of the Palestinians' cause.
His actions meant he would miss out on a chance to win a medal, but Nurin admitted he had no regrets.
If the same situation arises, I would not hesitate to take the same decision. The world needs to know that Israel is an occupier and they practice all kinds of laws that deviate from the international laws and human rights. We need to send a message to the world that we deal with all religions with dignity, just as the Islamic religion recommended us to do. Except for the ones who fight against the religion and the Muslims. We are against them and it's our right to respond to them. We have the right to defend our religion and all oppressed Muslims.
The Olympic Charter takes a strong stance against any political acts, stating that no kind of demonstration or political, religious or racial propaganda is permitted.
However, this isn't the first time that a Muslim athlete has protested against this controversial lineup. Many are now starting to ask questions about the Olympics and their lack of sensitivity on the subject. Also, are the games being used to whitewash Israel at a time when Palestinians remain deeply oppressed? Robert Carter, London.
More and more people in the EU are congregating indoors. The highly contagious Delta variant of COVID-19 is spreading like wildfire in countries like France and Spain. More people are also travelling within the EU. Citizens in Brussels have been sharing their thoughts on the Delta variant.
I don't know where the cases come from, if it's a coffee restaurant or just meeting in our house.
when I see how people are behaving sometimes, yeah, I'm not surprised.
The European Central Bank, which manages the euro, says economic confidence is being undermined.
The pandemic continues to cast a shadow, especially as the Delta variant constitutes a growing source of uncertainty.
On Monday, EU finance ministers rubber-stamped COVID-19 recovery funding for four additional nations in the 27-country bloc.
Croatia, Cyprus, Lithuania and Slovenia. Now more than half of national plans is adopted.
However, critics say the billions of euro being administered to national governments will result in citizens being saddled with decades more austerity because there is too much emphasis on loans rather than grants. According to analysts, EU leaders are harming the bloc's economy through their foreign policy. Sanctions are inhibiting trade. Economists say the Iranian market represents a big opportunity. It can be availed of if current efforts to save the JCPOA Iran nuclear deal succeed. We have been speaking to the head of the European Parliament's Iran delegation about the subject via Skype. She believes the agreement will be reinstated soon.
Many people in Iran say, oh, again and again and again. We have not a good partner on this side. This is one of the impacts of this horrible, stupid policy of Trump.
The International Labour Organization, ILO, warns an additional 25 million jobs could be lost globally before the end of this year due to the coronavirus. However, the ILO says if we see an internationally coordinated policy response, the number of people losing their jobs could be much lower. Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Fiqh or jurisprudence is an Islamic knowledge and is ranked
the Holy Prophet of Islam is the example
of
self-purification is the most significant
factor.
Imamat is a living principle in the history of Islam and Shiism. This is Ulama Speech, the best selection of the speeches of prominent Shia scholars.
In the name of Allah, the Beneficent, the Merciful. Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio. Welcome to another episode of Ulama's Speech. In this episode, we invite you to listen to the English translation of a short speech by famous Iranian Shiite orator and lecturer, Hujjatul Islam Ali. Stay tuned.
وجود مقدس ولی عصر علیه السلام یکی از شؤون و یکی از کاراش حاکمیت سیاسیه که الان نداره تعطیله.
Political sovereignty is only one important aspect of the life of Imam al-Mahdi, which during his major occultation or Ghibat al-Kubra is out of work. However, other types of Imam al-Mahdi's powers are working even in his occultation. This is why the Holy Prophet of Islam, Prophet Muhammad, Imam al-Sadiq alayhi salam, and other infallibles in many narrations stated that the presence of Imam al-Mahdi in this world is like the presence of the sun behind the clouds. The sun behind the clouds is still the sun with all its duties. None of its activities are shut down. It is behind the clouds, but it still is the sun. The only thing that happens to the sun behind the clouds is the decrease in its degree of light and energy. However, the life cycle is still activated by the power of sun. In better words, Imam al-Mahdi in his major occultation is like the sun when it goes behind the clouds. Some of his powers are out of work, but many other dimensions of his activities are still active and at work. Thank you very much, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, for listening to this episode of Ulama's Speech, which was the English translation of a short speech by Hujjatul Islam Ali. To find out more about this program, log on to our website, parstoday.com, Call of Islam page. We leave you in Allah's care. Fi amanillah.
Iranian Radio, Global Mission. This is IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
in the limelight.
A steady trickle of new information from a standard probe in Brazil is showing how vaccine shortages are linked to corruption, says Andrew Fishman, reporter, in an article titled Worst of Brazil, COVID-19 Vaccine Corruption Implicates Top Bolsonaro Allies. Stay tuned for more. Brazil's failure to contain the COVID-19 pandemic and promptly purchase vaccines has largely been attributed to ideology, the economic, libertarianism, and anti-science stances of far-right President Jair Bolsonaro. As a steady stream of revelations of multi-million-dollar kickback schemes in vaccine purchases emerges, however, another possible motive is emerging: maximizing profit. There is a direct relationship between denialism, corruption, and the way the pandemic has become the country's greatest health tragedy and the greatest story of corruption, Representative Paulo Pimenta, an opposition politician, told The Intercept. Two separate but intertwined cases with a strong evidence of fraud have become the focus of a Senate investigation into the government's mishandling of the pandemic. The cases implicate members of Bolsonaro's administration, his key allies in Congress, and senior members of the military appointed to top roles in the health ministry. In both instances, health ministry officials attempt to buy vaccines through intermediaries rather than directly from producers, which are less likely to partake in brazenly crooked deals. Bolsonaro reportedly failed to intervene when alerted to irregularities in the government's negotiations to acquire 20 million doses of the vaccines produced by biotech at above-market rates. In a sworn Senate testimony, the whistleblower claimed that the president said it's another scam by this Ricardo Barros, referring to an ally who is a leader in the lower house of Congress and a former health minister who serves as a prominent member of a powerful and notoriously corrupt centrist bloc. Bolsonaro, who rose to prominence on an anti-corruption platform, has not refuted the accusations. What's more, the president's son, Senator Flavio Bolsonaro, has close ties to the owner of the intermediary firm at the center of the scandal, Precisa Medicamentos. In the second case, the health ministry's former head of logistics, Roberto Dias, allegedly requested a $1 kickback on each dose from a supplier, U.S.-based Davati Medical Supply, which claimed that it could provide 400 million vaccine shots. Davati, it turned out, was not actually a representative of the vaccine company and had no way of delivering on the deal, yet somehow was able to negotiate with top officials. Meanwhile, revelations continue to trickle out of the Senate Commission, which convened in late April and will resume hearings on August 3rd after a two-week recess. As a presidential candidate in 2018, Bolsonaro ran against a large, powerful bloc of political parties representing the country's oligarch, known widely as Centrão. He slammed them as corrupt and the worst of Brazil. At Bolsonaro's campaign lunch, a close advisor told the crowd that Centrão is the embodiment of impunity. Yet, as evidence of impropriety mounts and public opinion tilts sharply against Bolsonaro, the president is deepening his alliance with Central, handing over more power in an apparent strategy to secure some impunity of his own. Recently, Senator Ciro Nogueira accepted Bolsonaro's offer to become his chief of staff, a key cabinet-level position reserved for trusted allies. Nogueira is a Central leader and has been directly implicated in coronavirus-related corruption. He is also under investigation in 5 other criminal cases. He was the president's main defender in the Senate commission, where he will be replaced by Flavio Bolsonaro. By handing over the keys to the presidential palace, Bolsonaro will appease the Speaker of the Lower House of Congress, Arthur Lira, who is from Nogueira's party and is the only person in Brazil who can initiate or block impeachment proceedings over the tragic mishandling of the pandemic. More than 550,000 Brazilians have died of COVID-19, the second highest death toll in the world. Since last March, public health experts and political observers around the world gnashed their teeth at Bolsonaro time and again, downplayed the seriousness of the disease, and encouraged Brazilians to live their lives as usual, without masks. A comprehensive study by researchers at the University of Sao Paulo concluded that the president intentionally and systematically acted to spread the virus. Tatiana Roque, coordinator of the Science and Culture Forum at the Federal University of Rio de Janeiro, told The Intercept that the Bolsonaro administration pursued an anti-scientific, denialist, eugenist, and individualistic response to the pandemic due to deeply held ideological commitments. Every tool to effectively combat the pandemic requires greater regulation and a greater presence of the state, she said. These collective measures, according to Roque, go against the founding ideology of this extreme right, which is its libertarianism. Pimenta, the member of the Congress from former President Luiz Inácio Lula da Silva's opposition Workers' Party, said that corruption is at the heart of the pandemic response, and that Bolsonaro is responsible. Anyone who knows Bolsonaro, the Bolsonaro family, knows that no corruption scheme occurs within the government without the direct participation of the family, Pimenta said. He is the head of the criminal scheme, him and his sons, he added. According to Pimenta, the intentional spread of the virus was part of a strategy to facilitate bribes on contracts for vaccines and emergency medical supplies. It's perverse because you need the country to have many deaths to justify to the public opinion that you're going to pay more than the market price, in theory, to prevent those deaths from continuing to occur. Even though it was you who caused the deaths, it's Clafesque, said Pimenta, adding, the pandemic was a window of opportunity for them because the pandemic ended the need for bidding. What's better for a guy who deals in corruption than being able to buy everything as an emergency purchase without bidding? Senator Humberto Costa, also of the Workers' Party and a member of the Senate Commission, told The Intercept that ideology and the desire to not close down the economy motivated the pandemic response. The corruption was incidental. The administration knew that there was no way to continue stalling the purchase of vaccines, but they saw that the amount of money being spent was very large, and then they went after some possibilities that could result in bribes, said Costa. Rodriguez, vice president of the Senate Commission, said The inquiry has implicated the creme de la creme of Bolsonaro base in corruption cases, including many people with relationships with Senator Flavio Bolsonaro. The investigation is also looking at more than $159 million in suspicious deals between the logistics firm VTCLOG and the health ministry beginning in 2016. The contracts began prior to the pandemic and the Bolsonaro administration, but are still active and involve his key allies, including Nogueira, Lira, Flavio Bolsonaro, and Beres. Flavio, who was charged last year over a suspected embezzlement scheme involving mafia figures, rankled even close supporters in March when he purchased a luxurious mansion in Brasilia worth over $1 million, a home that would be unattainable based on his official income. Rodriguez said he expects to uncover more corruption before the inquiry is finished and that the investigation has already had a substantial impact on coronavirus policy. The investigation changed Brazil's agenda, he said. The country's agenda is no longer dictated by Jair Bolsonaro's nonsense. The result of the Brazilian government's failure to combat the pandemic is a story of shortages and despair. One in three Brazilian state capitals have suspended first dose vaccinations due to supply shortages. With 18% of its population fully vaccinated, Brazil lags behind regional neighbors such as Uruguay and Chile, which has some of the highest rates in the world, as well as the Dominican Republic, Cuba, and Colombia. In Rio de Janeiro, for example, eligibility only extends to those age 34 and older, in addition to adults of any age with comorbidities. New infection rates remain high, but are down from near record numbers in June. A recent poll suggested that only 5% of Brazilians do not intend to get vaccinated once they are eligible, despite a year-long deluge of anti-vaccine messaging from Bolsonaro and his allies. Meanwhile, the human cost of the pandemic continues to pile up. As of April, COVID-19 created over 130,000 orphans in Brazil. And with the economy lagging, 9 million more Brazilians joined the ranks of malnourished and hungry during the pandemic.
This is A to Z. An introduction to Islamic lifestyle. Today's lesson, anger. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. In the name of Allah, the most beneficent, the most merciful. It is usually said that ill-humored individuals who are peevish with everybody torment and annoy their friends and relatives, while they themselves suffer the greatest torments because they embitter life's honey and make pure water unpleasant for themselves. Ill-humored people have a short life and an uneasy spirit. Their body is in pain and are prone to more sufferings than others. Good temper is one of the qualities which Islam has emphatically recommended to its followers. It has been referred to as an important factor for attainment of the eternal paradise. Imam Ja'far as-Sadiq alayhi salam has said, "One who is ill-humored torments himself." See, brothers and sisters, anger is one of the most commonly found negative attribute in human society today. Everybody has become so short-tempered, everybody has become so selfish and opinionated that way before anything serious happens, you see that the emotions are high and the anger level is high, and then, you know, the offensive words and sentences that get said, they're there to be found, and then there are fights, there are, like, you know, punches thrown, there are physical fights, because all because of what? Anger. But what is anger doing to us? According to Imam Sadiq alayhi salam, it is tormenting us, right? Now, we're going to talk about different types of anger, but we right now are talking about anger where you shouldn't have displayed this anger is where the problem is. Welcome back, dear listeners. Today we are discussing the topic of anger, and we said that there's some justified anger, like, for instance, against the enemies of Islam and humanity and those who are oppressing people. Yes, we are supposed to get angry against them, but then we're talking about this commonly socially found anger, which is because of short-temperedness and lack of patience and lack of, you know, taqwa and iman. Anger is one of the evil whispers of shaitan, which leads to so many evils and tragedies of which only Allah knows their full extent. For this reason, Islam has a great deal to say about this bad characteristic. And the Prophet Muhammad ﷺ, described cures for this disease and ways to limit its effects, among which are the following. Number one, seeking refuge with Allah from the shaitan. Number two, keeping silent. Number three, not moving. Number four, following the advice of Prophet and Ahlul Bayt. Number five, knowing the advantages of controlling your anger. Number six, knowing the bad effects of anger. Number seven, dua and supplication. We can discuss each one of them at an appropriate time, but remember that when you're angry, know that Allah is watching you. Allah's Prophet, His angels, His Ahlul Bayt are watching you. So do not be angry in places that you're not supposed to be angry at. Dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, thank you very much for staying with us till the end of today's episode of A to Z. Don't forget to log on to our website at www.parstoday.com, Call of Islam page. We leave you all in the care of Allah. Till next time, wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.